I love Unity of New York because I get fed by so many channels before I even take the platform. I get to get fed by everyone who takes the space and shares what they share. That song just moved me so deeply. I'm so grateful to be here. I want to just kind of continue with a theme that I have brought to you last week. The theme was, last week I wanted to just let you know that I do know that victimization does take place on planet Earth, that we are visited by victimization, all of us, in more ways than we can even understand. Some of us in very standout ways. There are some very general themes that are visited on humanity. It's all about separation. It's all about one person saying, I'm me and you're not, and I'm good and you're not, and I am worthy and you are not. But what I reminded us of last week, and I would like to just again remind us of, that even though we are visited by experiences of victimization, it is never a cause for us to take on an identity that says, I am a victim. I reminded you of just some of the stuff that I've gone through and how easy it would have been for me to just proudly have shown my badge of being a victim, because I could bring so many people and so many incidences into my story in history that would have many people going, oh, you have every right to be sad. You have every right to be angry. You have every right to be confused. You have every right to be volatile. But I have made it my business all of my life, to the best of my ability, to use anything that feels like an experience of victimization as a reason for me to rise higher, as a reason for me to tap in to the unending well of what is possible for me to be. There is always higher ground for us to reach. And if I look back over the course of my life, sometimes my motivation for moving to higher ground was that something extraordinarily wonderful happened in my life, where it was so clear to me that God was in my face and that God loved me, and I had an opportunity to rise into what God thought of me. There have been many times in my life where I have not been that psyched about me, where it took an outside agent or agency to say, hey, you're awesome, for me to even get out of the idea I was carrying in that moment that I had forgotten my awesomeness. And that's who I want to be for each of you. If there's ever a moment for any of you, if there's ever a day, if there's ever a period in your life where you have forgotten how awesome you are, how worthy of applause you are, you deserve a standing O every single day because you have continued to put one foot in front of another foot, in front of another foot, marching even through the valley that is called the shadow of death. It's called shadow because truly there is no death. And some of us know that more deeply than others, but I am here to remind us that you are worthy of applause. At other times in my life, I am forgetful of who I am and whose I am. And I'm walking around and I'm not having a very good experience of myself in the world. And someone outside me says, you're looking great. Oh my God, are you feeling as good as you look? And then suddenly it just snaps me out of it. Years ago, Timothy and I were traveling down south. We were going somewhere down south. We stopped in a little roadside place to have breakfast, one of the fast food joints. I don't know which one it was. But I was down on myself during that drive down. Oh, I know where we were going. I had actually been invited to sing at Mar-a-Lago by Marla Maples. And I'll tell you, on something so important, and of course, we were put up at the biggest, best five-star hotel in Florida. But I got to tell you what I did. We drove to Florida, and Timothy and I stayed up partying all night long before we took that drive to Florida. And when I got up, I had not even packed decent clothes, so I threw them quickly in. I was still wearing what I was wearing the night before. I did not shave. I did not moisturize my hair. I did not do anything. And when I looked at myself in the rearview mirror and saw the guy that was going to go checking into the hotel and to say, I'm here because I'm singing tomorrow at Mar-a-Lago, I was so down on myself, and I was thinking, oh, my God, you've done this a number of times. Something very important in your life is about to happen, and what do? You party, and you wear yourself out, and then you're not even completely present in the experience you're celebrating. When are you ever going to learn to save your celebration till after the event? And I eventually did learn to do that, but I got to tell you, since I was a hippie in the 60s, my M.O. was party hardy all the time. If you're going to take a flight in the morning and you should be well rested, forget about that. Party hardy, baby, because you were heading on another trip. So Timothy and I were driving along, and I was very quiet because I had seen my reflection in the rearview mirror, and I looked like bloop, to put it politely. And I walked into, and I was also down on myself because of financial reasons. It was like, oh my God, I just spent so much money treating people at the bar because I was going to sing at Mar-a-Lago. I was a big shot in my little country town neighborhood bar. So get everybody. This was my gas money I was spending on these people in this bar. I was so down on myself. I don't get down on myself very deeply, very often anymore, but when I do, let me tell you, it is something else. I'm a guy who loves myself so much that I've told a number of people who have broken up with me over the years. And it's like, you know, I'm sorry to break your heart, but I'm off and running with somebody else. And I just respond sincerely with, I love me enough for the both of us. Feel free. Go on. Do what you got to do. I love myself enough for the both of us. But this day I was down on myself. And Timothy and I walk in. And as we walk into this place, and we're in the South, and we go in, there's this little kid, like as we're coming in, he's sitting over there with his mother. This little kid, so he looks like he's about 6 years old. He's a little redhead, freckle-faced boy. And when I come in, I don't know if this kid is in shock or not, because as we come in at my first notice, his eyes are as big as saucers and his mouth is hanging open like. And then I get as I'm coming in that he's doing that in response to me. Now, I think that he is thinking what I'm thinking. Look at this unshaven, unhair-combed, loser kind of a guy. He looks like he's still in the clothes he wore to bed last night. I'm thinking this kid is stunned by my dysfunctional presentation. And as I get closer to him, he's... And I go past him and his mom's table to get in line to get my food, and I hear this little kid go, Mom! Who is that? And she goes, Who? Him! Who is that? And she looks and she goes, Oh my God, he does look like somebody I should know, but I can't download anything. I don't know who he is. And then I hear the little kid go, Well, he's somebody. He changed my whole reality in that moment. I let myself off the hook in that moment. So who I want to be for you all is that little red-headed, freckle-faced boy that sees you come in and drops my mouth and stretches my eyes big, because whether you know who you are, I want to know. Even if you don't know who you sure are somebody. That's my deal. And I cannot offer you anything more than an opportunity to please be in a world where it appears as though there are victims. You can be in that world of appearances, but what I offer you is to behoove you not to take that on as your own identity. Do not ever think that you are the victim. Once you start believing you are a victim of one person or one thing, you have opened the door to believing that you can be the victim of anybody and anything. That is what I am working on in my life. I never want to preach to anybody anything that I haven't, like, relatively mastered in my own life. Someone in one of my workshops after one of our services, I do the workshops generally on the first Sunday of the month, and somebody had seen something in the program about prosperity and prosperity consciousness, and one of the women in my workshop, she said, "Oh my God, I love hearing you teach. Like, you really should start. I think you would be very powerful if you would start teaching prosperity consciousness to us here at Unity of New York. Somebody has given courses on how to develop millionaire consciousness and how to bring more of what you want into your life." And I said, "I would not be a good teacher of how to have millionaire consciousness because I have not manifested my mastery of that. I do not mind, trust me." Somebody said, "Why are you always acknowledging to people that you haven't got your finances together? People look at you. If you didn't open your big mouth, people would think you had it going on financially." And I'm like, well, my job is to tell people the truth about me. And so I am not a person who you can look forward to giving you a class, a sermon, or a workshop on how to attain millionaire consciousness unless it is in God's design that I one day become that. And then I will call Britt and say, or Zoe, and say, my talk title for next week, which I'm so excited about, is that love and forgiveness opens up the windows of heaven so wide that you get poured out a blessing of so much money you can't even figure out how to spend it all. After you tithe, after you give to charity, you still have so much you'll never. If that happens for me, I will preach to you all about it. Until it does, I am not your man to talk to you about developing millionaire consciousness. I am your man to talk to you about the power of forgiveness, the power of seeing yourself in others, the power of peering through the veil that seems to separate the one child of God into a dissected, cut-up group of people. I am your man if you want to know someone who is speaking to you from a personal history of letting go of the story of my pain so that I could be born again. Someone who came to the living understanding that every single time we spew out poison in behalf of anybody out there, they are just the target. They did not put bitterness in us. They did not put fear in us. They did not put hatred in us. They did not put the spirit of retaliation in us. They were just the trigger. And you've had so many triggers in your past, and you'll have many more to come in your future. But who I am is somebody who is working on not being triggered by my triggers. My job is to stand flat-footed and go that whatever anybody else is doing, that's their business, but my business is to live Unity of New York's vision statement and mission statement. I couldn't stand myself if I did not practice what I preach. I would feel sleazy if I were not doing everything I can, like I said last week, to grow up to be like God. When different pieces of news come over the air, I know what my assignment is. This is what I think. I think that most of us are very, very clear about the fact that many aspects of our world are crazy. There is a lot of craziness going on in the world. We are clear about that. Another thing we love to be clear about is that much of the energy, the atmosphere of the United States of America can be crazy. So we're clear that the world is pretty crazy. We're clear that the United States and some of its people are pretty crazy. But until you get clear how crazy you are, how crazy you can be, then there is no hope for the overcoming and no hope for taking on the mind of Christ. Today's talk title, "You Gotta Be Out of Your Mind." Last week, I said that just in response to the unity principle number one. If unity principle number one in its original wording, which we were given in the daily word today, in its original wording, that there is only one presence and one power in the universe and in my life, and that that is God, the good, all-powerful. Most of us, if we tell the truth, even though we've been around that statement forever, if you look into the secret recesses of where we really are thinking, most of us to some degree believe that to believe there's only one power and that it is God and it is good, that you've got to be out of your mind to believe that in the face of all the contrary evidence. Look at how much evidence there is that there is something else other than God. I call it not God. We believe in God and not God. I spoke last week and said we're supposed to be monotheistic, but we're not. Not if you really look inside, because most of us believe in God, yes, but we believe in not God too. And most of us believe that God and not God are in a fight to the finish. And although we hope God wins, we are afraid that not God might win, as far as my life is concerned, as far as my capacity to attain peace and health and joy and happiness is concerned. So the first thing that Carlos has to do to be on track is to every single time I am tempted to believe there is a not God, to call myself back into the garden and go, that was an erroneous thought. There is but one presence. There is but one power in the universe and in my life, and it is God, and it is good. Now ask me if that's the way it always appears, and I will say, no, it doesn't. It doesn't always appear that way, which is why we've been instructed to judge not by the appearances of things seen, but to judge a righteous judgment. The word righteous meaning right use. The right use of your judgment as a child of God is to constantly declare it is good. Don't always look good. It is good. It's the deal. My mama used to say, the Bible of Carlos doesn't say that all things are good. The Bible says all things work together for good. So if you're looking at something and it doesn't look good, then you don't have to like question your eyes. You have to just go further along that even though this does not look good, even though it doesn't feel good, even though I don't experience it as good, I can have faith and I can trust that all things do work together for good. Some of the ickiest moments of my life, some of the most fearful experiences of my life, some moments in my life where it looked like everything fell apart, no matter how I tried to keep it together, in retrospect, I got to see that what was being torn down needed tearing down so that I could build a new building, a new cathedral on its spot. Many of the relationships that have ended that I did not want to end have ended because it was necessary to end a dance that wasn't working. The music had gone off. We were stepping on each other's toes. If I had not lost that relationship, I would never have found the love of my life. You know, there's a book that came out at least 30 years ago, maybe 40 or 50 years ago. The title said it all. Once I read the title, I didn't need to read the book. The title awakened me. And the title was, "You Can't Afford the Luxury of a Negative Thought." You can't afford the luxury of a negative thought. I ran into a woman in my neighborhood that I had not seen in a long time. I ran into her at the laundromat yesterday. And she got out of her car, and I got of mine, and she's, "Oh, Reverend Carlos, it's so good to see you." And then she came running over to me, and she was like, "Oh, my God, you got to tell me something that'll give me back my peace. Everything that's going on politically today. And then did you hear about these people down in North Carolina? Oh, my God, the race is just coming out. All of a sudden, there's all these races." I'm going, "All of a sudden?" All of a sudden? It
It's horrible. There's never been times like this, Reverend Carlos. I really need your prayers today. It's never been like this. The world is just getting crazier and crazier. And I said, child, you're as old as me. And unless you were in a coma through the 1960s, you might have been in a coma through the 60s. But if not, how dare you say it's never been like this before? How dare you? Do you remember all those assassinations? Do you remember that we couldn't, sometimes a period of 3 or 4 months couldn't go by without someone being blatantly shot down? Do you remember the disadvantages? Do you remember the oppression, the levels of it? You're talking about all of a sudden? And then you're trying to blame it on the president, like he gave birth to racism in America. No, child, it's been there. And what is there underground? Thank God, I say. I heard a woman on the radio driving here, Tim had on some channel, and this black woman on the radio, she was saying, I just want it to go underground where it used to be. Well, I don't want it to go underground. No, I want it in my face so I know what I'm dealing with. That's what I want. And the main thing I want is I don't want to fight fire with fire. The main thing I want, I don't want to go back to the old school law thing of an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. The thing I want is I don't want to judge against the people who judge against me. The things that I want is not to be the picture of separation that does present itself in the world. I want to be somebody different. And so my job is to make sure that I'm willing to be out of my mind. Because you gotta be out of your mind. You gotta be out of your mind not to react to the appearance of things seen. You gotta be out of your mind not to get to shaking in your boots sometime because of what's going on in the world. You gotta be out of your mind to wake up every day with a mission to love and to embrace and to accept everyone as yourself. Today's daily word, when I read it this morning, I was thinking, well, that's a cute little beginning. Because it's telling us something about noticing God in flowers and babies and great spiritual teachers. Well, whoopee dink, you don't get no spiritual points for loving babies and flowers and great spiritual teachers. You don't get a perk period. You don't even get an E minus. You're not even in the classroom. Anybody can love people who love them. A dog loves a dog who loves that dog. We're here to do something bigger, something brighter, something more expanding. And you can't get no more expanding than wishing well to someone who does not necessarily wish you well. That's where you get your perks. Now, granted, I've had people say, well, you're too rough on us sometime. Or I've had people say, why do you stretch us so much? And you know, lately, you've seemed to have gotten more energetic about it. Sometimes you scare me. I think you're going to go into a Holy Ghost dance up on that platform. And when I just might, trust me, I use so much energy up here, y'all, not to go into a holy dance sometime, not to speak in tongues sometime. I put my Pentecostal spirit on a squash when I come to Unity of New York. And in Unity of Boston, I let a little bit of it out. And when I'm at Hope Church, I let it all out. And tell me, there have been times where it's all I can do not to jump off this stage and go running around in circles because there's that much spirit in me. So I'm doing good, y'all. I'm doing very good. I'm doing very, very good. I remember when I was little and we was looking up the word civilized. And so I went over and I was talking to my dad about it because I wasn't sure I had the pronunciation right. We learned to read before we were like when we were 3 and 4, and we could all read the newspaper with very few words we couldn't understand or couldn't read by the time we were like 5 years old. Mom insisted, she was an educator, and when you go to kindergarten, you're going to be fluent in the English language, you're going to be fluent reading. And so I remember I didn't know how to pronounce the word civilized. I think I was calling it civilized. And then my dad said, no, it's civilized. So I read the definition. And I said, is that your definition of it? And Dad said, well, Carly, I think a good definition of the word civilized is deaden up. Just be a little deadened up. I think that when them white missionaries got to Africa, boy, and when they got to South America, and when they got to some of these islands, these people were just too buck wild for them white missionaries. And when the missionaries wanted them to get civilized, they basically were saying, can you calm down a bit? Can you not go so wild? So part of my time on the stage of Unity of New York is trying to be civilized for you all, trying to deaden up just a little bit for you all. And so back to the talk title, You've Got to Be Out of Your Mind. When I say you've got to be out of your mind to take on the true belief in the principles, you cannot be in your mind, your little mind. Our little minds are the minds of the ego. They are the minds of the separate self. Our little minds are based on and were born out of fear and the idea that I'm me and no one else is me. And there is no one but me to take care of me. I've got to be in a fight or flight mode for most of my life because I am living in danger. So that's the mind we tend to live in. And as long as we're in that mind, even though we have years and years and years of unity, science of mind, other new thought background in us, as long as we think we're the same person, there is no end to the work because we are at a fight or flight. I'm me and no one else is, and I'm separate and I'm an island and it's scary. We have that consciousness at a deep place. It's our persona, our mask that we wear. Unity is asking us to look beyond the mask, to see that the second principle says that in essence, everyone is good. In essence, that's so no matter who you're talking about, I want you to remember you're talking about their mask, you're talking about their costume, and you're talking about the role they are playing in this grand play that Billy Shakespeare reminded us that this whole thing is, that this whole world is a stage. I had heard that and read it. He said that we're all just actors and actors. Some of us in one moment of our life are playing the victim, and at other moments we're playing the villain. In different departments of our life, sometimes we flip roles and play them. Well, I had an experience of it, which I did tell you about last year. I am so revved up right now. I don't know. You better not say that. I don't know what to do. I am so excited because the day after tomorrow marks the first year anniversary of my death, physical death and resurrection in the hospital in the town that I live in. I am so psyched. I am so psyched to be still alive. I'm so psyched to have come back. And I told you all that where I went, all there was where I went were points of dancing light. I knew that the dancing light was everyone, including me. I knew that the dancing light was all innocent. It was all pure. I was aware of what Billy Shakespeare said because I could see dancing lights coming in. I knew from an incarnation. I knew that the dance these two lights had played were the dance of being at odds, not liking each other, not supporting each other, one a victim, but the lights just bounced together and they danced. And I had an internal knowing that this is where we go. We go back to the light. The scripture says all of us came from the light and all of us must return to it. But I got in a very literal sense, everything is light. There are no villains. There are no victims. There are no mistakes. All there is an opportunity to get the light while you're back there breathing. And I think getting that is what propelled me, my spirit, back into my body and finally kicked in a heartbeat. and then a long pause while I contemplated it. Do you really want to go back there? It's so easy to get stuck. It's so easy to forget there. It's so easy to get off purpose. Dude, the illusion is mesmerizing. The illusion is hypnotizing. And then, another heartbeat. Yeah, I'm pretty sure I'm ready to go back there. And eventually coming back full force. I'm so excited because I do have an urgency within me. It's an urgency. I'm always with church people. I'm always with spiritual people, spiritual communities. I'm always with people who have those kind of vision statements, people whose vision statements basically say, I don't want to be. Remember last week I told you my grandson, we said, you're going to be all right. You're going to be okay. I don't want to be all right. I don't want to be okay. I want to be great. So our vision statements declare that we are a community of people who are not satisfied being like the other people. And I am the other people, so I'm not satisfied being who I have practiced being. The woman outside of the laundromat went on and on for 22 minutes about how horrible the world was and what's going on in North Carolina and what's going on with Korea and what's going on with Obamacare and what's going on. She went on and she was so emotional about it, and she was asking for my help. You've got to help me, Reverend Carlos. I gave her what I was able to give her, which was basically, in the midst of all that's going on, please with me practice not taking on the identity of being a victim. Please do that. It can look like it, but don't tell yourself you are a victim. Da-da-da-da-da. I gave her my little spiel. Then she realized she had to go, so she popped in her car. We gave each other a quick hug. She popped in her car. Then she starts to pull off. Then she pulls back. Then she rolls down her window. Then she sticks her head out her window. And then she goes, oh, I almost forgot. I'm a new grandma. And I'm thinking, you tell me you're a new grandma as an afterthought. A soul was born into the world that is your downline. A baby landed, full of promise, full of hope, full of beauty, full of God, direct from the light. And that's not what you're filling your attention and your mind on. You had a new grandson born yesterday, and you're not dancing in the street? You can't get your dance on because of what's happening over in Korea? You can't get your dance on? You had a baby born to your baby, yet your mind is filled with North Carolina and Donald Trump? Do you see your part in your own pain? Do you see your part in it? I told people in Boston a few weeks ago, if some of us who don't like Trump, this is another thing, people at Unity Churches assume when they get on the platform and say something about Donald Trump, they assume that everybody in the auditorium doesn't like Donald Trump, and it's not true. It's not true. There's some people in the hug line who've whispered to me, thank you for telling people to quit hating on my man. But they have to whisper because y'all might crucify him. But to allow what is upsetting to you take up all of your mind space. My friend could have had her attention fully on a brand new grandson. And the joy that focusing on there brings her. I told the people in Boston, some of us, when Donald does something outrageous, are immediately outraged. And we think it's just a response, a conscious response to something he is doing or saying. And it's not true. Like I said, all of that is already in us. We just let it out. And we target someone with it. It's what we always, always do. So many of us not only are outraged by what we think is outrageous, we are secretly hoping for more. We are like those CNN reporters who are bored stiff when there are no planes falling out of the sky, no policemen killing anybody, no drama going on. It's so interesting. It doesn't happen often, but there are short periods in the process of life on planet Earth where there's no psychodrama going on. And you see the news commentators looking so bored. We've got nothing to get excited about or to excite you about today. Everyone's just loving each other. Everybody's getting along. What a bummer. We're hoping that tomorrow something will happen that can get us excited again. To tell the truth, we do get excited with our upset. We get very excited. Some of us who don't care for Donald are hoping that he just gets more and more and more and more of what we call crazy. We want him to follow through to a point where somebody, somewhere, begins impeachment proceedings. And yet we sit around acting like we have nothing to do with what he's saying. We have nothing to do with the outrageous things he does. Oh, yes, we do. We want more. Tell the truth. We want more. We want something more utterly ridiculous, something more divisive and dividing. We love it when we can be right in response to him. We can be right in a reflection of who we call wrong. It's not just Donald. Somebody in Boston said, "Will you don't ever ask me to bless Donald Trump again. You know, that's just too big of a stretch." And I said, "I go for the stretch. Because listen, if your chances are we're going to fall short, so I'm giving you the biggest stretch I can give you. Like I told you, in my neighborhood, where Trump signs are everywhere, and 3/4 of the people love him, and 3/4 of the people hated Obama, hated him, blamed him for everything. Carpenters in my neighborhood would accidentally hit their thumb with a hammer and blame it on Obama. They'd get a flat tire and blame it on Obama. They blamed everything on Obama. And now many people are doing just the same turnaround. And so the people in my neighborhood I invited to quit hating on Obama. And people who are hating on Mr. Trump right now, quit hating on him, because you can't afford the luxury of a negative thought. If each of us had a machine attached to us that showed us what goes on with the quality of our blood, what goes on with the level of circulation of our life-giving fluids throughout our body, what goes on with the strength or lack of it in our muscle tissue, what goes on with the ripples in our brain that allow us to experience drips of endorphins, if we were plugged up to machines to see what happens to me when I am judging anyone out there, maybe I would stop. Because hating on anybody, as somebody said years ago, hating on anybody out there, blaming anybody out there for your lack of peace, for your lack of joy, it's like swigging poison, hoping they die. If you were plugged up to a machine and you could see what 5 minutes of being a judge does to your body, to your blood, to your life force, what 5 minutes of complaining does to your health, how it deteriorates it. When we are hating on people and we are upset and we're complaining and we're judging and we're accusing and all of that, it gets multiplied, pressed down, shaken together, and returned right back to us energetically. If we could see we were killing ourselves, maybe we would stop. Maybe. But some of us would hold on anyway. because attacking others is the only way I can feel halfway worthy. So maybe even knowing I was leading myself to a quick death, my addiction to judging, my addiction to self-righteousness is what I cherish most. Better to die in a few years and have that, like my dad being told, quit eating pork or you will die within the next 2 years. I mean, if you quit eating pork, you can live 2 years longer. If you stop eating pork, if you keep eating pork, you're going to die this year. Stop eating it, you can live 2 more years. And we drove home, and all of us are psyched. Ooh, Daddy's going to live 2 more years. Daddy got home, walked into the refrigerator, got out the bacon, the sausage, and some ham. Proceeded to put all of them in a skillet. We said, are you cooking for us? He goes, you crazy, this is all for me. And it's like, what are you doing? And Dad said, like I'm talking about somebody, you might not want to drop the rock. Dad said, Carly, I don't want to live 2 extra years without my pork. I just don't. I don't want to live two years without bacon, 2 years without ham, 2 years with no sausage. What kind of life is that? You know, and he wasn't kidding. He did die that year. Eating pork, bacon, ham, sausage, smiling every time he was eating it. So some people are not motivated by what will keep you alive longer. But can you be motivated by what will bring you peace? What will bring you peace? The only thing that will bring you peace is your willingness to wage peace. I love that Jewish scripture song that I grew up with that said, I'm going to lay down my sword and shield down by the riverside, down by the riverside, down by the riverside. I'm going to lay down my shield and sword down by the riverside. Church, I ain't going to study war no more. I ain't going to study war no more. I ain't going to study war no more. I'm going to turn my sword into a plowshare. I am going to be here living for peace. I cannot do it with my mind. I have to be out of my mind in order to take on the mind of Christ, which, don't get scary about the word Christ. It is not something that just applies to Jesus. Christ is the one Son of God appearing as the many. Christ is the one who sees beyond the veil, sees through the appearance of things seen. Christ is the power that gets you up every time you're knocked down. When you're in touch with Christ as your identity, you know how ridiculous it is to ever be afraid. When I say there's no one to blame and there's nothing to be afraid of, I'm stone cold serious. The only way I can say that is that I have practiced it and I have found it to be true. So once again, though I won't be teaching a mental millionaire consciousness workshop anytime soon, I will teach and bring to your remembrance always the power that is within you, which is greater than anything you have ever encountered, are currently encountered, or will ever encounter. I have practiced turning what upsets me into what excites me. I came back here urgent to give an urgent message that let's not half-step, y'all. Let's stop shucking and jiving, y'all. Let's do this thing for real, y'all. Your life is at stake. I don't mean you're breathing. You can be the walking dead and be walking around breathing. I'm talking about your life. You know the difference between breathing and life? life is filled with possibility. It is filled with excitement. It is filled with wondering what the next day will bring. It is filled with marveling at it all. So that's what I've come to offer you. And I hope one by one and name by name, you will receive that offering. Join me in being out of your separate mind and into taking on the mind of oneness, equality, equity. Amen.
Peace!